Dear Venerable Bhante, dear sisters and brothers, Dhamma friends, we are going to have a Dhamma talk. May everyone settle down for the talk and give the consent with three times, Sadhu, Sadhu, Sadhu. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ දසුත්තරං පවක්ඛාමි ධම්මං නිබ්බානපත්තිය නිබ්බානස්ස කිරියාය සප්ප කන්තක් පමෝහනං තීති Dear Venerable Bhante, dear sisters and Dhamma brothers and Dhamma friends, whenever we are going to have a retreat like that, specifically in a retreat residential, we consider it as a very rare chance in our life. So therefore, we try our best to give the maximum facilities or conducive conditions so that we can achieve the desired targets. For that, the Buddha, specifically the Buddha to be, tried his best for a long time, and after the full enlightenment, he looked back and tried to summarize the knowledge he gained long this time, and looking from a beginner's point of view, he tried to present what are the best conducive conditions one must look into and one must fulfill in order to achieve this deliverance. It is in Pali called anugrahita, that means the facilitating. So, after the enlightenment, the Buddha enumerated 5 factors or facilitating factors one must make sure, assured, in order to gain one's own liberation. You find in the Anguttara Nikaya, Panchaka Nipata, that means in gradual saying, Book of 5. The very first thing the Buddha mentioned is that one must have one's own moral restrainment. So therefore, if whenever someone is going to undertake a retreat, full-time retreat, or just a monk or nun, the main thing one must look into is one's own moral restrainment, or Sila Sikha. So that is why at the beginning of this retreat, we take everyone up to the standard of 8 precepts. So that means we are making ourselves, taking our precepts renewal, so that our mind become very diligent to the task. So therefore, throughout the retreat, each and every one of us must maintain this moral responsibility towards each other as well as one's own precepts. So for this retreat, we have taken 8 precepts at our base. So Venerable sisters and brothers, they have already taken precepts, they will keep it up to them. Others take the precepts as something kind of a refreshment or renewal of one's moral boost. So this is a Sila Anugrahita in Pali, that is to say they taken moral restrainment. The second thing is one must listen to the teaching of the Buddha again and again, and that is to develop the theoretical understanding or the book knowledge or to understand the methodology. That is why we have taken 1 hour or so in each and every day to listen to the teaching. So for this particular retreat, I selected one particular discourse from the Buddha known as this Dasuttara Sutta. You may find in the Digha Nikaya, the long discourses. That is the last sutta in this Digha Nikaya. So I would like to take Dasuttara Sutta as the common topic, and each day we will take one after the other. And for the sutta we have the kind of arrangement of the knowledge or theory of knowledge. Venerable Sariputta is the speaker here, and he give a epistemological or graph point, or put into a table how we can put the whole teaching of the Buddha into this question and answer model, and that particular way being named as Dasuttara, that is to say making groups, growing groups from 1 to 10, that means there are 10 questions. The first 10 series ask the single units. In the second 10 you ask twos, threes, fours, fives, like it is growing number of groups and ending up with the tens. So that is how this Dasuttara came into being. And the third aspect of facilitating is the discussion. Sometimes we call interviews. So each and every day we have taken 1 hour for interviews or discussion. That is also to facilitate, and that's tradition in Theravada we call Kamatahan Suddhakarna. That is to say, each and every person after the meditation, according to this instruction, meet the master and report their own meditation experience, and then have a interview face to face for discussion. So in this particular retreat we are going to have this discussion as a common discussion. Everyone get together instead of personal interviews. So there are the yogis get the instruction and put into practice in different ways, like sitting meditation, walking meditation, and how to be mindful in the day-to-day activities. And during the discussion time, we are sharing our experiences. If there are any things to be clarified, put it as a question. This is the third aspect as far as the five facilitating factors are concerned. The fourth one is meditation of concentration or one-pointedness. And the last one is the meditation on insight knowledge. So that is how one take care to give the maximum facilitating to achieve one's own desired goal. So this hour we are going to take this Dasuttara Sutta and to discuss to gain the basic understanding how to meditate according to the teaching of the Buddha. So last time when we are meeting still again in the Florida, we have taken the Dasuttara Sutta. The first 10 questions we have discussed. So therefore I thought of taking the second set of questions. It is about twos, asking from the number 1 to the 10. Venerable Sariputta is asking the question, and he never expect the answers from the audience. Instead, he himself give the answer. So this may be the first time in the human history the epistemology or the theory of knowledge come into being. and it is very historical point from the Buddhist dispensation is concerned, as well as the human mind and the human knowledge is being concerned. So if we are to give consideration the contemporary time of the Buddha was a practical and a pragmatic person. He used to give different instructions throughout his duty of 45 years, and he never gave any thought how to continue this, how to preserve this, and how to put into the monastic code, and how to put into the discourses, and how to put into the philosophical exegesis and kind of thing. But instead, there were different students or disciples. They were specialized. What they did was compiling the knowledge or put into graphs and tables and thought about how to maintain to this lineage and give into the disciples, by the disciples to their own disciples' life. So that is how this theory of knowledge came into being. So in that respect, Venerable Sariputta is quite extraordinary. During the time of the Buddha, he himself tried to compile particularly the discourses. So that is how the last two discourses in the Digha Nikaya, the long sayings, came into being. The 33rd discourse is called as Sangiti Sutta. He gave the skeleton or structure how to gather together the teaching of the Buddha into the Book of One. That means the whole discourse is discoursing only one aspect for the time being. And there is a Book of Two. The Buddha stressed two points, important points, and accordingly, there's a particular discourses. There are the Book of Three, there are three aspects. Book of Four, you find five aspects, like it goes up to 11 aspects. So this is the model of Anguttara Nikaya. You can see before the first synod, during the contemporary time of the Buddha, Venerable Sariputta presented it, and then the Buddha appreciated it, and likewise became an authentic teaching. And when it comes to the Dasutra Sutta, it has put into the 10x10 chart and presented. So someone can think about the skeleton, someone can think about the way, the teaching of the Buddha, not only for one's own liberation, but for maintain from generation to generation. That is sometime one we can say theory for the sake of theory like. So that is how even after the 2600 years later, we can get in a scriptural form, and it is presented in a gradual process, not merely for the theory of sake of theory, but it says it is leading to one's own liberation also. So therefore it is very crystallized form in this particular sutta. So whenever you have time to read, please go into this particular sutta and see how much precisely Venerable Sariputta put them into a chart and put them into a 10x10 chart and presented in a pragmatic way. So the very first question he is asking each and every set, every book is, what is the thing greatly helpful? So in this particular question, he is asking what are the two things greatly helpful. Katame dve dhamma bahukara. So, after raising the question, that question is to take the attention of the audience, and once that is been defined, the question is been defined, then Venerable Sariputta himself give the answer satyaca sampajanyanca ime dve dhamma bahukara. He, Venerable Sarvata himself, he gives the answer, mindfulness and the clear awareness or clear comprehension are the two things greatly helpful for one's liberation. So, as far as today's talk is concerned, we can say we are going to learn the term or word meaning of mindfulness. In Pali it is called sati. And the second, the couplet, in the second of the couplet is the sampajanya, that is called clear comprehension or clear awareness. So these two are very, very important, and therefore if you think about any kind of a change in your life, any kind of a change in your likings and disliking, any kind of a change in your personality, these are the two aspects directly responsible. So therefore, when and where you are going to learn about mindfulness and the clear comprehension, that is going to make a real change one's life. So I thought it is very important, very good to start the first talk with this sati and sampajanya, because I can remember whenever these two terms came into my life, how that make the difference for me to reconsider all the likings and dislikes, all the personality traits, all the way of life. So it's very nice, the Buddha, to share his own understanding of sati sampajanya. It's very nice, Venerable Sariputta's understanding of the sati sampajanya, to take it as a topic, so it will give a very good discussion among the disciples. So the mindfulness, all the scholars, they have fair doubt whether the sati, the term sati, the Pali term, been properly translated into English by the mindfulness. So therefore some suggest sati is been translating as mindfulness as well as awareness. So when you are reading literature, you can see there are little differences, but anyways we have to start somewhere. And while practicing only, your definition of sati or your definition of mindfulness will come into being. So literally we have to start somewhere and then put into practice, and then we have to discuss, and then only it is evolving. So I can remember when I was in Nilambe, in Sri Lanka, the mindfulness came into my vocabulary. I discussed with number of people as to see whether mindfulness is static in one's career or whether that mindfulness is evolving while you are practicing or while you are advancing in your character. So at the beginning, my idea was mindfulness is cut and dry, a specific meaning. So therefore, one day I can comprehend the complete meaning if it is a static one. But now, after 20-30 years of direct involvement, I find the mindfulness is evolving. Even though you start with somewhere, as and when you keep your moral restrainment, as and when we keep your concentration restrainment, as and when you keep the wisdom restrainment, the mindfulness is evolving. So therefore, you can feel as and when, as the time pass, how it is evolving. So if you are to study the 37 factors of enlightenment, the mindfulness itself appear in 8 places. First and foremost, it starts with the 4 foundation of mindfulness. 4 places you can see the mindfulness. With respect to your mindfulness, with respect to your corporeality or bodily aspects, kayanupassana, and the mindfulness with respect to your feelings and mindfulness with respect to your mind and the mental factors. So there itself, there are four stages or four evolutions, metamorphosis of the mindfulness, and then it appear like sati indriya and sati bala, sati sambojjanga and sati marganga. So when and where it become a faculty, or it's a power of mindfulness, or as a fact of enlightenment, or as a part and partial of the Noble Eightfold Path, mindfulness is evolving. So when we are dealing with the group, it is very difficult to give a one static literal meaning, because different people along the path, we have to keep rooms for the evolution. So therefore, when you go to the commentarial exegesis, the commentators try to give a stable meaning, so that it may be a starting point. So we being practical people, we have to keep it as a literal meaning and then work it with. Likewise, while working, you have to keep your mind open, then only a growth or development can take place. Otherwise, you will be arguing with each other, taking your own stand. That means you are simply not mindful. Mindfulness is such a mental factor. It's catering for anything and it's very open. And therefore, right from the beginning, you have to understand by listening to a talk or by opening a book, definitely you will start with. And if you are going to take this is a cut and dry and hard and fast, then that itself will be a limitation for you to progress. So therefore, we'll start with, but keep the subject open for future developments. And the clear comprehension always work together with the mindfulness. And even in the famous sutta known as Satipatthana, you can see Sato Sampajano, Sampajano Satima, they appear like very close friends. But in Satipatthana Sutta, strange enough, the Sampajanya come first and then Sati later. Almost all the other places, Sati come first and then Sampajanya come later. That means mindfulness come first and then clear comprehension follow the suit. That means these two couplets, the mindfulness and the clear comprehension itself is reciprocal each other. Whatever the starting point, it gives rise to the other mental factor, and later once that is become evolved, it feed back to the next. So likewise it is going hand in hand, sati sampajanya, and very important aspect. So when I am reading about mindfulness, the best book so far I can remember is Venerable Jnanaponika's book on power of mindfulness. And that you find in the Buddhist Publication Society books, and you can get the free distribution in the soft copy. And the first two pages in the introduction, Venerable Jnanaponika has given a very, very revolutionary, very lucid interpretation or introduction to the sati as such, or mindfulness as such. And we can understand what happened throughout the history after the great demise of the Buddha to this mindfulness. It indicates how much the history of mindfulness and the history of Buddhism go hand in hand. I am a born Buddhist in Sri Lanka, 74% or 75% Buddhists, but I also learned Buddhism as a subject in the school after the grade 10. And but we never learned, we never heard about that mindfulness or sati as a subject, as a aspect, or as a part and partial of the Buddhism. So in age 26, only I met one Australian monk, and it was not to learn meditation or not to learn any scriptures, but I was little interested in, because he was a white skin. And he came to Sri Lanka and became a monk, so I just wanted to talk. And while talking, abruptly, he asked me whether I know or appreciate mindfulness. Then I told no. Then he says, how can you say you are a Buddhist if you do not know this mindfulness? Then I told, no problem. I got a credit pass in the subject of Buddhism, so you, how can you challenge me? I am a born Buddhist. My birth certificate says I am a Buddhist. And I got a credit pass also in the Buddhism. That means mindfulness is not so much related to the Buddhism. They sarcastically start laughing, and he says, this is the problem. This is the core teaching of the Buddha, or core teaching of Venerable Sariputta. He says, these are the main things, very, very meaningful for life, not only for the Buddhist, but for each and every person. And you being born Buddhist, being a born Buddhist, you are claim yourself as a Buddhist, but you don't know the mindfulness. Then I ask him kindly, please teach me, what does it mean? He says, you are a hopeless case. I don't think I'll be successful in teaching you mindfulness. Then I told him, don't put me into the sarcastic plate. And just teach me, and then only I can give a challenge to you and say whether I know it or not, because therefore, please take time. Then he says that it's a long story. So read this book, The Power of Mindfulness. And it was a difficult thing, because at that time my language, English, was not so sharp. So he went to the Buddhist Publication Society and got a single copy, translation, Sihie Balamahimeya, and we were talking and discussing, and we were very friendly. So it took about 8 years for me to get the basic understanding on this mindfulness and how to put into practice. So even though at the beginning of this very talk I mentioned the five aspects of facilitating or anugrahita, the first and foremost is the moral restrainment. Venerable Dhammika, the Australian monk, he never imposed moral restrainment upon me as a prerequisite for the mindfulness. He told, never mind. Even if you are not taking the precept, just read mindfulness and try to put into your life and see how much you develop the necessity for the moral restrainment. How much you can go with mindfulness without moral restrainment, or how it is going to teach you in time to come how much the moral restrainment or sila anugaita is important. Keeping the subject open, he was ready to go forward, and that is how it started in my life. And I was very happy. So therefore, when I am also teaching, traditionally I say the moral responsibility is a prerequisite or necessity. But don't make it as a blockage, don't make it as a restrainment. Just try to understand the meaning of mindfulness and try to put into your life and see the relationship, how much it is asking for you to be a moral responsible man,
or moral responsible person. And when and where you feel the necessity, make your mind free to adopt into that. That openness is, I would say, part and partial of the mindfulness. So mindfulness itself, the definition of mindfulness itself, we can take it as beginners to be here and now. So when and where someone to be mindful, he or she has to understand with respect of unmindfulness or asati, how much in our day-to-day life we are unmindful. That means we are living in the past or future, or we are always think about other people and other places, not here and me. So with respect to unmindfulness, mindfulness comes and says, be here and now. When and where mind dwell in this very thought moment, that is mindfulness. And you have, when you are reflecting and think and give a trial to keep the mind here and now, then you can see how much it is jumping to the past, jumping to the future, and think about the other people and other places. So there you may see it is just a monkey mind. That is called unmindful mind. So when and where you learn the term meaning of the mindfulness and try to be here and now, it is always an equal challenge for each and every person, whether you are a female or male, whether you are a beginner or an advanced person, whether you are ordained or non-ordained, whether you are Buddhist or non-Buddhist, the challenge is equally complicated. So therefore, whenever we give an effort as a group or as a single person, individual person, the early experience of the mindfulness always somewhat discouraging. Like, whenever you try to be mindful, you are bound to see habitually how much your mind is unmindful. That very understanding is self-negating. That very understanding is irritating. That very understanding is self-critical. And that very understanding will let you know the rest of the world is not conducive for you. They are not giving the support. And the world is otherwise. So therefore, when and where you try to be mindful, it is appear like something irritation. So unless otherwise you get the proper definition, proper openness in your mind and theoretical understanding, definitely you will give up and you will get discouraged. And that is how out of many beginners, very rarely one person can strive through and carry this message along with one's own life and wait to get certain amount of substantial results. And historically, we can see the written history in Sri Lanka. There was a golden time, golden age, where the mindfulness was very open subject. Laity as well as the ordained people, they were mindful, and at that time the life was very simple and down to earth and prosperous, and people were not only thinking of their own economy, and they can take care about the national economy, and they put up all the buildings with respect to the religious aspect, and everything went. But later, due to the natural disasters and foreign invasion and kind of thing, the Buddhism remained except mindfulness. So therefore, we were Buddhist, but we do not know what is the bearing and what is the weight on the mindfulness. So for about last 1,000 years, the Buddhism remains without the mindfulness. So therefore, Venerable Jnanaponika's book is really pinpointing it. if you do not understand the value of mindfulness, you can maintain the ism, you can maintain the frame, you can maintain the rituals and kind of thing, but without the essence of it. So therefore, not only for the Buddhist, even non-Buddhist, they have to understand the basic message or very core of the teaching of the Buddha is more related to the mindfulness and this clear comprehension. But when and where the religion become very old and with time, this crux, the meaning, the essence get lost and the other rituals are remaining. And it has been observed in all the religions on the earth, when and where it become popular, fame and gain, theoretical understanding become more important, and other aspects become important, their essence, something like mindfulness, loses like quicksand losing from your hand. So that is what happened. Many people attribute this recent upheaval of mindfulness with the Buddha Jayanti. Buddha Jayanti means after the great demise of the Buddha. 2500 years later, there was a huge ceremony in Sri Lanka as well as in the Theravada Buddhist countries. There are some people found the frame is remaining, but the essence of the message is lacking. And that is how, again, the reconsideration happened to the mindfulness that basically happened in Burma, and other people, other countries, Theravada countries, was happy to recharge their religious activities with the mindfulness. That is how we Sri Lankan, back in Sri Lanka, got the message from Burma. Therefore, we are always grateful to the Burmese masters, specifically the Mahasi Siyado. And the message from the Mahasi Siyado to Sri Lanka, specifically for the English-speaking people, the linkage happened through Venerable Jnanaponika. He went there and practiced as an obedient disciple of the Venerable Jnanaponika, Mahasi Siyado, and then got the basic writings and the presentations, but the Mahasi Siyado was not happy to give them unless otherwise people are practicing mindfulness. Just by literal understanding it won't, but he got a very sappy, very juicy, very rich literature. But when Jnanaponika was good enough to convince Mahasi Siyado, and then not only he's been a good practitioner, he was a good writer, and came to Sri Lanka, and he wrote books, and basically in the Buddhist Publication Society, and that is how, again, back like a person like me, came across mindfulness. And now we have about 30-40 years of experience. The Buddhism, again, recharged or given the energy with the mindfulness, so therefore, with the development of this recent frustration and tension and all the kind of mental situation, mindfulness gained the ground. And it is happening equally in this year also in USA and other Western countries, Australia, Malaysia, Germany, all the places they find the special role of the mindfulness, not only in individual development, but in the society at large. So therefore, mind, whenever you are going to the subject of mindfulness, you have to understand, first you may gain certain amount of literature understanding, literal understanding, theoretical understanding, and then whenever you put into practice, that evolves. If you are not putting into the practice, you will ever keep in this sphere literal meaning as your knowledge, but whenever you are practicing, that will be outdated. Refinement can take place. So, mindfully, whenever you read mindfulness and come to know, this is the understanding to keep the mind here and now. That is we call, we develop kind of a faith upon mindfulness. So I would say giving a special priority for this mental factor called mindfulness with compared to the other mental factors, and that very discrete and discriminated understanding or emphatic understanding of mindfulness is fairly, we can compare with the faith. It's kind of a natural selection. In the teaching of the Buddha, there are a lot of mental factors identified discreetly and say, this is a mental factor, this is called faith, this is what you call the energy, this is the mindfulness, this is the concentration, this is the wisdom, and this is desire, this is hate, and all the kind of things. So when someone is going to take the mindfulness as the crux or forerunner or the important thing, then onward his or her evolution, his or her changes going to take in a very unhindered way. So therefore it is free for each and every individual to take this mindfulness as the main thing in my life or not. It's completely an accident. No one can impose to others to say, take it and you must take, otherwise this and that punishment. Mindfulness never work on this regimentation method. So in American experimentation or in the nervous neuroscience and all the kind of thing, I read once in the Richard Davidson's book, Your Emotion Life of Your Brain. There he says that mindfulness sometimes go with the synonym of the meditation. Meditation and the mindfulness sometimes come closer. The mindfulness is a meditation. Meditation means mindfulness. So he says that even in USA, this mindfulness and the meditation, you can practice as a way of life, just like other walks of life. And literally, it is, you can read it books, and there are meditation centers and teachers, but he says he can't understand why only a very tiny factor or minute factor of the population take this mindfulness, even though it is going to give an answer for many questions, why only a little people take it and the others reject. He says he can't think about. He says only a very little fraction consider mindfulness as a very important thing, just like Venerable Sariputta going to pinpoint, it's a more the helpful thing. But even when you are listening, even if you are reading, even if someone is presented, it is up to you to take it or not to take. So that is a kind of a natural selection. So if someone is taking out of faith, and he or she going to find this is something special, then he or she will not just keep it on the faith. He or she will try to put into their life, put into their practice. And for that, just mere superficial faith is not enough. Just mere theoretical understanding is not enough. One has to get the instructions and guidelines how to put the mindfulness into practice. And for that, we people come to treat it like that or read it specifically and get the instruction how to put into practice. So when and where that kind of enthusiasm, that kind of not trying but striving going to happen, then according to the teaching of the Buddha, Buddha gave a set of instructions for that kind of seekers. And as I try to share with you all in the basic instructions, then the Buddha is prescribing, if you are willing to put the mindfulness practice, you must take the external and internal atmosphere, which is more conducive for the mindfulness, just like surgery, you have to go to the theater. Likewise, when and where you wish to put into practice, you have to come to the forest, or go and sit under a tree, or go to a place, solitude, and without that, the starting will be very difficult, because we are living in such a society and such atmosphere, specifically the lay life with the multitasking and everything, not conducive to keep the mind here and now. Always it is eccentric. The more you call developed, more you call social, more you call infrastructure and the communication and all the kind of thing, you may become naturally eccentric. Hardly you may keep the mind here and now. So therefore, if you wish to keep mind here and now, it is not merely a mental factor, mental aspect. It depends on the external society, external atmosphere. That is how the forest come into being, the under a tree or solitude place are important. And once you become enthusiastic and go into the forest or are sitting under a tree or living in a solitude place, there again you have to understand, you have to select a posture where you can maintain it without much of intentional activity. So that is how you just cut off the mental aspects, so-called willful action or volitional activities, and let the mind to settle down, and you fix the TV camera-like diligence or vigilance or the mindfulness, and observe yourself when and where you do nothing, but diligently and vigilantly you're observing. So this is the aspect, the practical aspect of mindfulness. So we call meditation. So I am repeating, whenever you try to put that mindfulness into practice, not only you are selecting the external atmosphere, the macro climate, you have to select the posture where you, according to the teaching of the Buddha, it says the best is to sit and meditate. Because in the sitting posture, once you adjust, once you make it symmetrical and relax and feel comfortable, you can just keep it, maybe a few minutes, without any intentional activity, just observe what is happening. Here the observation is not with your carnal eye, but you close your eyes and try to feel, try to experience, when the mind become here and now, how can I verify it, whether the mind is here and now? The bringing the mind, or the effort you take to bring the mind to here and now, is pertaining to more with mindfulness. But the verification as to whether the mind is here and now, am I aware, it somewhat related to the clear comprehension. So these two work together. So therefore, when and where you are relating your mindfulness experience, you have to tell, these are the things I did for the starting mindfulness, or set the mindfulness in, and these are the points where I verify it. Categorically, I can say, yes, mind is mindful. So that means it's a very, very sharp, short to the point, short and sweet communication. Many people, knowingly or unknowingly, or in the sense, at the practice of meditation or not, may be here and now. But they are not verifying it, and they are not taking effort to report to someone. Therefore, they can't get the accumulation of the experience. They can't progress along that line. So therefore, when and where you become mindful, just mere, that is called mere mindfulness, is not enough. You must try the criterion how to verify it is not unmindful, it is not the past, it is not the future, it is not other people, not other places, but here and now. So two aspects come together. One thing is setting up, the fixing the mindfulness here and now. And the second thing is verification. So therefore, when and where you try to be mindful and try to be verified, is it a religious activity or is it worth calling religion or whether it is a scientific experiment, it is somewhat challengeable. So, present day in meditation, within the Buddhist circles and outside the circles, may people, those who are very sharp to understand the verification aspect of the mindfulness, they find path is frictionless. Those who are not emphasizing on this verifying aspect, they make lot of difficulties and complications. They may be successful in mindfulness, but they are not aware. They do not know how to verify. They do not know how to communicate with. So this is the crux of the problem specifically in the modern day society. So therefore, Venerable Sariputta is, when he's asking what are the two things greatly helpful, he says mindfulness plus clear comprehension. If I am to draw the first question Venerable Sariputta is asking, what is the single aspect helpful greatly? It is diligence. If you reduce it to the single aspect, it is diligence. If you ask what are the two things, then you have to divide the diligence into two aspects, mindfulness aspect and the clear comprehension aspect. So when I am practicing with Venerable Jnanarama back in the Nisarnavaniya, after ordination, I had certain amount of theoretical understanding by reading books and kind of thing. So I am diligently practicing maybe 8 to 12 hours a day, sitting and walking meditation. I feel the kind of growth inside, but the interviews were not so efficient. Interviews were not so straightened. So therefore, I can't gauge whether I am progressing or not. So after the passing away of Venerable Jnanarama, it happened me to go to Panditarama, that is the great disciple of Mahasisyado, and he was the best master I found, that is straightening the communication. He gave enough value for these interviews. He take one by one and then give the way how to report your experience. And whenever you are beating on the bush, he says, this is not the thing I wish to listen from you, no cock and bull stories. Just tell me, how do you verify when your mindfulness is intact? It's a completely different story, and ultimately it becomes more a scientific report rather than a meditation. And if there is no, that kind of a connection happens, if you do not know how to report and how to verify, how to be specifically mentioned, you will be rotating in the same place. You are in a rut. Very difficult to bring you up. That does not indicate you are not a diligent practitioner, you are not a faithful practitioner, you are not an energetic person. But even if you are energetic, even if you are diligent, even if you are a faithful person, your expressibility, your verifiability, your relating your experience with the teacher is very important. So therefore, if you know how to couple this mindfulness with the clear comprehension, it will be easier. It's a more facilitated way. So therefore, if you are as a person, is very concerned about mindfulness and very concerned about your dedication and your striving, just mere mindfulness won't give the maximum benefit. I would say the confidence, the faith or foresight, if you won't pay enough attention to the clear comprehension. So therefore, clear comprehension is something you have already in your mind. It's an endowment. If you are not mobilizing it, if you are not put into use, mindfulness gets stagnated. If you understand the clear comprehension, when and where mindfulness come face to face with, contact with, or under your very nose, you must pay enough attention how to relate this to another person, how to verify it. That verification is the proximate cause for your confidence. And that is gathering the momentum. And the early part to establish mindfulness and to relate it to another person or verification is painfully slow. It is really, really discouraging. So therefore, at the beginning, you have to be very patient. You have to understand each and every one of us is a beginner. So it is not a personal mistake. You must not worry about thing that you are a very stagnating person and very slow momentum and gathering the momentum on acceleration. So it is very slow gathering. And after a while, whenever the clear comprehension that sampajanya come into work, come into work together with the mindfulness, then you find it is not only the expressibility, not only the enthusiasm, not only your confidence, your personality is changing. Your likings and dislikings are changing. The habitual life also is undergoing a change. So therefore, it's very organic. It is very comprehensive thing. So very important aspect is to how to couple the mindfulness together with the sampajanya or clear comprehension. So that is the point I really appreciate Upanishad Sayado, where he is very, very keen about mindfulness. Yes, sure. But he is emphasizing again and again how to report, how to relate to experience. And he is so sympathetic. He says each and everyone is below the level of a beginner. Only the problem I found is that when and where to understand our sluggish, our painfully slow progress, I consider it as my weakness, then you are the failure. You have to understand it is painfully slow, but never give up. Keep on practice. Practice means take time to establish mindfulness. But meanwhile, you must understand how to verify it, how to relate it, how to communicate with others. And there you find these present-day languages are not sufficient enough. It is not a good tool to talk this subject. Except mindfulness, the world languages are very, very prolific. To make you eccentric, language is the main culprit, I would say. To make you eccentric, language is the main culprit. We are in a technological age. We are in an information technology, very advanced. But you can see how much we are paralyzed. When you are talking on the mindfulness and you are under the nose experience to someone, we consider in our day-to-day jargon, we feel like it's a wastage of time. When the mindfulness is intact, whenever you try to address to that particular thought moment, when you try to communicate with others, it appears like no any economic gain, no any political gain, no any social gain. So therefore, you don't find it is lucrative and worthwhile. So therefore, instead you feel it is doing any hobby or doing something, talking on the political issues and talking on other economic issues, it make mind itself is lucrative and talkative. But whenever you go to the mindfulness, you say it is dumb out. It is not a weakness in English language. It is not a weakness in singular language. It is not any weakness in our mother tongue. It's a nature. So master is the person giving you the tools and giving you the ways and means and inviting, even though it is not well written in the books, even though not it is coming from the lineage from the master, you have the basic capacity, you have the potential, you have the endowment. Don't give up. Again and again, try to express yourself when the mindfulness is intact. For example, as I try to explain in the basic instructions, whenever you come and sit, and if you know I am not walking, I am not sleeping, I am not stand still, I am sitting, how to verify? No language. So you have to start like a beginner or an elderly person learning a second language. You have to verify and say, you have to make sure, how can I for sure explain someone, I am sitting but not walking, but not standing, but not sleeping. Only you have to do comparative language. You have to tell when I am standing, I feel the pressure on my soul. Therefore, with compared to that, in sitting, I find the weight on my back or in the knees or the touching point. Likewise, the only through the comparison and respecting others' comparative knowledge, you can get a start. But if the other person is not mindful, you are utterly at a failure. If the listener is not a mindful person, you will ask, yes, you are sitting, then what? What's the use? What's the gain? But if the person listening is a mindful person and with thinking about one's own well-being, he or she will understand this is a really under-the-nose experience. No one can deny how much we are negligent about that kind of a knowledge. Whenever we are learning the worldly languages, worldly skillfulness and subjects and kind of thing, we may be very skillful in the subject matter. But whenever you come here and now, try to experience when I am sitting. So I try to share it with when and where you come and sit. If the mind is not the past and the future, if the mind is not chasing behind past and the future or think about other people and other places, you will get a kind of experience. You can verify and you can tell others, for sure you feel you are not dead. That's the way. So it is detrimental language. You are just telling, I'm not dead. So other will come and say, isn't there any kind of auspicious way of telling like that, mentioning about the death and all the kind of thing? Because we consider the death and everything as very bad language. It is not to learn, not to keep it in our morning time. Maybe in the evening time it's okay. But whenever you do auspicious thing, we never talk. But verily, each and everyone can feel, yes, I am sitting. When the mind is here and now, I can easily verify, I am not dead. The auspicious thing is there. This is what the Buddha is feeling when he is experiencing Nibbana. So you can experience Buddha whenever you sit and when you experience your sitting. And if you can relate it to the Buddha, he would say sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. But when you go and tell Buddha, I am coming from that clan and this clan, I am so and so and not going to give the address card, he will throw it away. What is the use of that? It is something imposed, but you are going to say, Bante, I got your experience, instructions. I used to sit. And when I am sitting, one day, I am sure, I am not chasing behind the past and the future, other people and other this thing. I feel, maybe for a split second, I am not dead. And then, direct plugging, direct connecting. Connection is happening. So try to get seated. Even not only in the sitting, that even when you are sleeping in back at during your retiring time, you can see when you're sleeping, and if there is no other distracting thought in your mind, maybe due to your adverting of the mind to the present moment, or maybe it is an accident, then you can feel Just like in sitting, in sleeping also, in sleeping posture also, you feel, I am not dead. The second aspect is, when you are keeping the eye vigilant to see here and now, you can easily verify you are not sleeping. You are diligent, you are aware. And that is undeniably the truth. That is called yathabhuta jnana, the here and now. You feel it. And if the other person also, the experienced person, specifically the mindfulness, he or she can understand this is not a hallucination, this is not a fabrication, this is not a storytelling. This is something happening. And the third aspect I try to relate is that when and where you become mindful, you know you are not unconscious, you are not fainted, you are not storytelling, you are not fabricating something. You see, I am conscious, I am aware, I am mindful, I am diligent. So when and where you be with you, or be with here and now, I am not dead, I am not sleeping, and I am not unconscious. These are the basic criterion. But to understand, this is very, very your core of your living. And therefore, when one can say, when and where someone is mindful, this is the only thought moment you are living. When and where you mindful, not mindful, you are daydreaming, you are fantasizing, you are in a hallucination, you are in a mental game, you are in a fabrication, you are dreaming to live. So therefore, how much we are giving the precise, the precious value for human life, when and where you become mindful, this is the only time you being a human. This is the only time you are back at home. It's the only time you are living. So now, we being elderly people, we find very, very difficult to be here and now. But it is not so difficult as an infant or young child below the age of 6. You can say each and every moment that the young child is here and now. That's the starting point we came. And once and when and where we try to assume our knowledge and the fame and gain and social status, ultimately it's carried away for a ride. Hardly we can come home. Whenever we come home, we feel odd. We feel something not natural. So much so we are eccentric. So the becoming mindful is one aspect, that is back home. You come back home and you know you are not dead, you are not sleeping, you are not unconscious. And the very appreciation of it, at the very relating that as your most important experience in the life or in the sitting moment, sitting hour, walking hour, whatever may be, that indicates your way of life, your likings and disliking, your personality, your habitual tendencies, so you can understand how rare we get an opportunity to talk with another senior meditator, talking on this here and now. Unless otherwise the Buddha appears on the earth, it will never happen throughout our life. Buddha is the only person after so much of experimenting, he cut across, he got the blink, and he says, please, take time, sit comfortably, don't have this intention, that intention, and all the kind of thing, no willful action, just be here and now, and try to understand how much you can just be. It is called just being. And that is the most difficult thing. That is why we learn different arts, different skills and competition and one-upmanship, fighting each other. But whenever you come here and now, it's a walkover. There's no one is fighting. No one is giving a challenge where they are. And you can try your best as much you like. And only the protest, only the distraction, only the difficulty is your mind itself. Mind hates it. throughout our life, what we have done is hating the present moment. That's why our skillfulness is. That is what our language, other abilities are. So whenever you become here and now, whenever you become mindful, there is no fighting, there is no rivalry. It's a human nature. Only the human can come here, come to this here and now. But our way of life we have developed in such a way, we are disturbing others, and so others disturbed us. So as far as we live this social life, or as far as we live this role play, try to be someone and something, so much so we are unmindful. So very, the way that we are thinking in the unmindful way, we are self-torturing, we are burning ourselves, or burning the candle from the both the ends. So therefore, if you are compassionate, if you have kind of a well-being, give little time and take little time and try to be here and now, not only just being here and now in sitting, walking and day-to-day activities, try to appreciate it, clearly comprehend it, clearly aware of it, then you find there is a similarity among ourselves. Each and everyone, when come to the here and now, they become human and we are the same. Whenever you assume something, whenever you try to be this and that, you are losing that humanity, and then the fighting starts, and then the stress starts, then the tension starts. So the answer is here and now. So but thing is, unless otherwise you appreciate it, very, very difficult for you to tap that source. And to end the talk, I would say it's painfully slow. To learning that stage is painfully slow, but anyway, once you install that in your computer, as so to say, then it's ever beneficial. Venerable Jnana Ponikin is writing, he says, once you trust mindfulness, it will never betray you. Always keeping you up, therefore, develop the faith upon that with your whole skillfulness and all the other abilities. Then onward, you have the reshuffling or reconsideration on your life, and the onward, you feel like born again like. So therefore, if you wish well-being of yourself, if you are wishing a new way of thinking and openness and the mindfulness and the clear comprehension is the key, but you yourself has to understand. So my speech, my talk, my discourse will be successful if you can get this idea and put into practice and to comprehend yourself, then it is successful. I hope you all will be cooperative to that, so that talk also will be successful, your meditation retreat also will be successful, your sitting and walking also will be successful. With that, we'll wish and will that blessing, I would like to sum up the today's talk. Thank you very much for listening. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.